You want to achieve great things? You want to reach the next level? Well, so does every other entrepreneur. You know what that means? You have to take every competitive advantage possible. Welcome to Let's Talk Business, the show where we're going to show you how to create this competitive advantage by being more productive and sharing the secrets of the world's top performers. I'm your host, Kenny Aronson, and I think it's time to get down to business. Welcome to Let's Talk Business, the show where we discuss business, entrepreneurship, and how you can do great things in the world. And today we have a very, very special episode. We're doing something different, and I'm super excited for it. I know that you guys are excited as well, even though I haven't even told you what we're doing yet. And we're doing a special segment of the show called Stuff Men Do. So what exactly are we trying to do here? Well, today, the first thing, I have a co-host, Glenn Tobias, and you might remember Glenn from one of the past episodes. He's a business owner. He has a lot of experience in helping men to really discover what their true place is in the world. And that's what the theme for this special episode and this special series is going to be. We're going to interview power players in the world, business owners, people doing great things who are changing the world and being great role models for other men around them to discover what it means to be a man in the 21st century. We're going to talk to different people all around the world doing different things from different walks of life to really understand what being a man means to them so we can make the world a better place. So first of all, if you haven't heard my show before, my name is Kenny Aronson. I'm the host of the Let's Talk Business podcast, the podcast you are listening to right now, and I'm also the CEO of Da Vinci Mind, where I work with entrepreneurs to be more productive with decreased stress. And I'm going to be one of your co-hosts for this show. And the other co-host, his name is Glenn Tobias. He's a great man, and I want to welcome him to the show. So Glenn, why don't you just give us a quick introduction for yourself and what your vision is for Stuff Men Do.
Kenny, thank you. It is really great to be with you. And I think all of your listeners, and for this episode, our listeners, now know what an excellent host you are. I was so impressed when you and I recorded a podcast together and just the way you keep things moving. So that's awesome. And we're thrilled to have whoever is out there listening today, or well, I guess for our listeners, whenever they're listening is today. So that works out fine.
Exactly.
We're recording today and you all listening, it's today. In any event, so The Return of Man is an organization that I have founded and am developing and I'm very excited about. And Kenny, you really described so well. I was speaking to somebody just recently and I had read an article about somebody saying, you know, why every man should carry a pocket knife. Now, honestly, I don't think that's a bad idea. But what The Return of Man is working to do, dig much deeper, and I, we don't care whether you are in ballet or whether you love violin music or if you like chopping wood and hunting with your bare hands. That is not what manhood and masculinity, those are not the things that define it. They're not the parameters. And so we are helping men dig deeper, find out, you know, let me unzip this flesh and find out who's inside of me. Let me find out the guy that's inside of me and let me get him unencumbered from all the emotional stress that gets laid on us and the various other burdens. I don't want to go too far into that because we're really here, thrilled to be co-hosting this with you. So Kenny, I'll turn it back over to you to introduce our guest.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Glenn. And first, I want to say thank you so much for the kind feedback. You know, it's the feedback from people such as yourself, Glenn, and everyone else out there listening that it really makes me happy to do what I do. I love interviewing people such as you, Glenn, and also our special guest today. So I'm really looking forward to things. And speaking of our special guest, so who are we interviewing today? Well, he's a great man. He's a beautiful man. His name is Edward Powers. And he's been a colonel in the Marines, and he's just finishing up his 22-year career as a chopper pilot. He's a leader, he's a man, and he's doing great things. And I'm super excited to talk with him today about his experience and what it means to be a man. So Edward, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Kenny. Thank you for having me.
Edward, the pleasure's all mine. And I've been looking forward to this episode for a while with you and Glenn. So why don't we just start at the beginning, Edward? I think that you are the best person to tell your story. So why don't we start there, Edward? What's your story?
Oh, great. Perfect question, Kenny. And I'm excited about the stamina of your listeners at this podcast, about 6 hours long, so I can get into this in the proper way. just joking, obviously. So I'll give you the short version of that. So how did I get where I am today? So interesting. I'll start just growing up. Had a Leave It to Beaver type childhood. Hopefully some of your listeners are old enough to know what Leave It to Beaver was. But I kind of grew up that way. It was pretty easy going. I had a family, very supportive family, and I had goals. You know, my goal was to find Mary, my wife, and the person I want to spend the rest of my life with and start my family and have some way to support that. Really, you know, the job was inconsequential, but those were my desires. I wanted to figure out, you know, how I was going to get the family thing going, how I was going to find my my mate for life, and then go from there. So that's awesome. So at 19, I found her, and we got married, and, you know, within a few years, finished college, and the first kid was on the way, and I looked around. I'm like, okay, mission accomplished. What next? And, you know, I realized that a couple things were missing. I had done maybe some things out of order. I went to college as a literature major, so I spent a lot of time studying, you know, the heroic cycle and reading stories like Beowulf and the Iliad and things like that. And I had a very wise professor, Professor Ahern, tell me, you know, hey, look, Edward, you're married, you've got a kid inbound, you started a job as a teacher, and you haven't slain a single dragon. This is not the way the narrative goes. And so that kind of woke me up, resonated with me, being very focused on, you know, the narrative arc of my life. And so Mary and I sat down and we talked about what to do about this. And the most prominent dragon slayer organization available at the time was the Marine Corps. They even had a dragon in their recruiting video. So that settled that. And lo and behold, I became a helicopter pilot in the Marine Corps and ended up flying Huey gunships for 22 years. And it's been pretty fantastic. Very, very formative for me. And I can't say enough good things about what a career in the service, and specifically for me in the Marine Corps, has done to change the way that I see the world. So there's a lot there. Obviously, it's 22 years. But just kind of fast forward to now, as I'm getting ready to transition out of the Marine Corps, you know, dragons have been slain. My four children now are out, released into the wild, and they're doing great things out in the world. And my wife and I are now going, okay, here we are, a mission accomplished once again. And where do we go? Where do we go from here? And so that kind of sets the stage for my transition. You know, I realized, you know, I got the family. That was great. I went out and I ended up serving the nation, you know, doing the things that we do in the service. And that was fantastic. But I've now come to realize that there's a bigger service that I can do. And serving the nation was awesome. And I think that's essential for many of us to do. But now I want to go forward and serve humanity. And those are the things I'm looking toward as I move out there. How can I serve humanity at large from there? So I don't know. That's a quick summary. That's about you know, a little over a minute there, but that gets you kind of to where we are in the most terse of terms.
But yeah, I'm sure that you've been through a lot in the Marine Corps and everything that you've done. And first, I just want to say thank you so much for your service. I appreciate it.
You are absolutely welcome.
So I'm sure that there's a lot of avenues we could go down, a lot of stories that you could tell. So why don't we start with this, Edward? What's next for you? What's the next dragon that you want to slay?
Okay, that is a great one. So for me, I really want to take the next step and show people, you know, the things don't have to be the way that they are. I just see, you know, whether it's leading young folks, the nation's finest in the Marine Corps, and then showing them, you know how to do life, not just in the military, but then once they're released back into the community and back into our nation as citizens, you know, how can they be the best? But then I see lots of other folks in every other walk of life, and they're just this supreme anxiety. And I just want to show people it doesn't have to be this way. There's another way. It's out there. And, you know, ultimately for me, the way I explain that is, you know, just telling them, hey, Jesus is real. He's out there. And if you can come to terms with that, you can come to terms with what was done 2 millennia ago, then you can live a different way, you know, and ultimately, spending time in the military for 20 years, the disciplines, the building of character that occurs there, that all really has allowed me to understand that there is, you know, a formative process that happens. We build up and go from there. But ultimately, as I talked to Mary and we decided, you know, where we want to go, we realized that the foundation that has allowed everything else to happen is the fact that we knew that there's a creator out there that cares what we do, that has empowered us. And all we have to do is accept that empowerment and move forward, because oftentimes we're just petrified for not doing that. So for me, that looks like giving back and trying to teach people and spending, you know, the balance of my time on this earth, which conveniently, because I started early, is a significant amount of time, but spending the balance of that time showing people, showing our culture the reality of Jesus, and doing that in several different ways. The biggest, the way that I like to do that is just trying to harness and engage with every facet of my life in the same way, and then teaching others to do the same thing. So examples of that, you know, there's this big shift, you know, business, personal life, you know, your spiritual life. And I think what we do is we kind of put on different sets of ethics as we go from here to there. You know, on the commute to work, you're basically changing uniforms, and all of a sudden you're going to act different when you get to work. You come home and you act different. It just causes this schism in our personality. And for me, in the military, there was a long time when I wrestled with this. I thought that I had to act a certain way, going and doing my work, and then I would come home and I would change characters, and then I would try to live my life there. You know, I'd go to church and I would change characters there. But really the thing that has liberated me is realizing that there's really only one me, and it's okay to be that person. And then once I've been able to embrace that, it allows me to move forward much more powerfully, because you're not spending a lot of time making sure you're staying in character. I can only imagine if an actor tried to maintain their character, you know, on and off set 24/7, how exhausting that will be. And I think I've spent a portion of my life doing that, and I want to help others realize that there's no need for that. Okay, the way we are, and you can pursue that. For my wife and I, we're manifesting that in business. So her real estate business now, we're calling it Brave Neighbor Homes, because I want to be able to do realty, help her to do realty in a way that's relational. Everything we do in our culture comes down to some sort of transaction, a relational transaction, cash transaction, whatever it is. But it's all transactional. How can we do these things in a more relational way? And I think that's where we're focusing there. And for me, I'll be beginning a coaching business. And then again, just the whole theme of that would be able to empower people with these ideas that I have, come alongside them, help them to understand, you know, who they are, not who they're pretending to be, or who their job says they need to be, or things like that, but figuring out exactly who they are and then being able to live there, but supporting them in that as we move forward. And then along the way, you know, I have a couple of organizations that I'm engaging with to spread the word as we move through life. So again, kind of a meandering summary. Don't know if that totally gets your question there, Kenny.
Edward, I really love all that you're doing to help people out and uplift them, because I think that all three of us, me, you, Edward, and Glenn, we're all about helping other people and helping to uplift them. And I really found what you said about being your true self to be extremely interesting, because it's super important. And to reach that point, you have to become emotionally vulnerable if you really want to reveal your true personality. And that's something that I've really been focusing on a lot lately, because, you know, it's kind of the coincidence that we brought it up. But I think that, you know, as men, it's very important for us to be emotionally vulnerable, so that we can kind of show our true emotions and feelings, so we can communicate and inspire others. So what do you guys think about this topic? How important do you think it is to be emotionally vulnerable?
That's a great question. I think you get what you give in this point. So, you know, if you're putting up walls as you're trying to relate with another person, with another organization, you know, business to business, whatever the relationship is, when you're putting up those walls, and then ultimately, if you're not allowing your emotional state to have a voice in your interaction, you're putting up a wall, and there's just a piece that can't be accessed. And there's power and strength in those things. It's real. It's where you are. And if you can't expose that, then you're never going to be able to make that connection. Because ultimately, you have to connect. You have to figure out where the other person is, understand where you are, and then from that point, you can move forward. And whether that is into a business deal, whether that is into some sort of relationship, building some sort of organization, all those things are going to amplify a person's ability to do that. The fewer walls, the more resources that are going to be available. That'd be my short answer.
Yeah. I was just about to ask you, Glenn, what your thoughts were. I know you've been quiet for a little bit over there. So what are your thoughts on emotional vulnerability?
Well, as far as me being quiet, that, you know, I... I'm eager for everybody to hear from Edward. I particularly wanted to just comment here, and Edward, don't laugh. I will try to make it quick.
Oh, good luck.
Kenny, Edward, and I led a men's Bible study last Saturday, and I asked Edward for 15 minutes, and 50 minutes later, 50 minutes later, I said, we were joking about Glenn. I thought everybody knows, you know, I live in a different world. But interestingly, Kenny, you bring up a great question, and this is something that men really need to grasp. It is only through weakness that we need those walls. It's only when we're weak that we cannot allow ourselves to be emotionally vulnerable. My dad was a Golden Gloves champion out of 3,000 men on his, back in those days, the Army and the Air Force were just the Army Air Corps. It was one branch of the military. In World War II, he was over in England, and he was a crew chief for a B-17 squadron, and so, but he was their top boxer on the base, taught us to fight, but one of the things he always said is, if you can avoid a fight, it takes the stronger man to do that. If you can even, and if you can't get out of that fight altogether, try to defend, try to do nothing but defend, because the better boxer and the stronger man can let the other guy just wear himself out. And those are two quick examples, but the point is, it is only through the strength of a true man, of a settled and a balanced man, who has his trust put in the right place, it's only that man that can feel safe and say, this won't jeopardize my masculinity by me letting myself be vulnerable. It's okay to put that out there. And I know as a guy that grew up very insecure and very worried about my image and always having to hide behind something, God was ready. When I finally started accepting God's enabling for me to be vulnerable, the interesting thing is respect I received from other people grew exponentially because people looked at that and they said, wow, I wish I could do that. So it's an important step forward, and I'm always amazed by guys like Edward because you almost have to dig out of him. You know, wait a minute, you flew a helicopter gunship. You know, you're a Marine colonel. These are all things that, you know, if a bunch of us don't corner Edward and force him to give us this information, he doesn't say anything about it. But it shows the kind of guy. Anyway. Those are my comments about that.
You know, it takes a real man, someone with real strength, to make yourself vulnerable and let your real feelings be known. So for the next topic of conversation, I wanted to talk about goal setting and making a big difference in the world. There's a lot of people out there who think that you should play it safe. But I think that if we want to progress as a society, as men, if you want to put your family in a better situation or your community in a better situation, you have to have a vision, you have to have big goals, and you have to go out there and have the drive to make a big difference in the world. So how important do you guys think this is? What are your thoughts on this topic? Edward, we'll go ahead and start with you. What do you think?
So large goals, the easiest answer, the quickest answer to that is the fact that, you know, if you don't have a large goal, then you're selling yourself short. Ultimately, your goals and the size of your goals reflect whatever your base of power is. So whatever your faith in your base of power is going to be reflected by the size of your goals. So for me, you know, my creator made this world and me. And so if my goals don't live up to that, you know, something that had, a being that had confidence to create me, and then send his son to sacrifice for me. If I don't have a big goal, then I'm basically selling that self short. I'm sure other people don't share that belief, but you know, whatever your source of power is going to be defined by your goals. If you have tiny goals, that means you don't have faith and trust in your large goals. So it's essential. It's essential for you to be able to achieve or tap into your potential to have those large goals. And I'll circle right back around, you know, to that narrative arc. If you go out to slay a dragon because that's the biggest, hardest thing you could think of to do. And it's going to require you to tap into every resource that you have available and maximize who you are, what you are, and what you do. So that would be my answer to that. It's, you can't sell yourself short. You know, you either chase the lion or you chase the kitten, and ultimately those are two very different things, and it shows a life that looks very different when you make that decision.
Yeah, totally. And I don't know about you guys, Glenn and Edward, but I would much rather chase the lion than the kitten. But I'm sure that there's a lot of listeners out there who, you know, maybe they're used to chasing kittens. I know that before I started getting into entrepreneurship and all these things and meeting great people such as yourselves, Edward and Glenn, that I was chasing kittens. You know, everyone else was doing something. I was going to engineering school, and I'm still finishing up my last year. And that's what everyone does. They go to college, they get a job, and that's chasing kittens. You got to have bigger goals. You got to have bigger ambitions. You got to make a difference in the world. And, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with going to college. I think that education is fantastic, but you got to have goals. You got to have a drive. You got to strive to make a big difference in the world so that you can move forward and make a positive impact, do your good. What do you think, Glenn? What are your thoughts on this topic?
You know, again, I'm gonna revert to something that Edward said to me one time, one conversation, and had a big impact on my thinking. And that is, so Kenny, you talked about, you know, the fact that you're finishing up your engineering degree and that, you know, the whole goal before was just get a job. Well, now you're understanding, you know, now you've moved on to, hey, life is about a lot more than that. So again, I think we all agree, hey, there's nothing wrong with having, you know, meaningful employment, nothing wrong with working for somebody else, whether you own your own enterprise or work for someone. None of those items are the point. Point is more a matter of who are you. So I'm not necessarily speaking to you guys here, but to our listeners, to anyone, I'm always interested in, hey, I do want to hear what you do for your career. I do want to hear what you do professionally. That's great. But is that part of who you are? Is that aligned with what you think matters in the world? And this is part of the great quest. It's why I wanted to collaborate with you, Kenny, and us to get somebody like Edward on this show, is the fact that there are so many guys out there that have been lulled into this thinking, sort of thinking that comes from a response to sit up, sit down, shut up, provide a Y chromosome when we need one, you know, take out the trash, can you do anything right, what's wrong with you, you know, make a paycheck, come home, and, you know, don't you know all you're supposed to do is want to play video games, have sex, make money, and see who has, you know, the fancier car. That's all there is to men. And there is so much more, but it is the word journey gets overused a lot, but it is a journey. It's a long journey. And, you know, with respect to goals, one of my favorite phrases is, if you can accomplish your biggest goal in your lifetime, it's too small. Think bigger. Because transference is a lot of what, I mean, I think age, chronologically, I'm a little up the road from both of you guys. And the closer I get to seeing the end zone, the more I think about, what am I transferring to others? What am I getting ready to hand off to guys that are coming up the road behind me, whether they be my sons, nephews, friends, relationships that I have with other men? What am I handing off? And what's going to be there one day, prayerfully, and somebody could say, you know, there was a guy back at the early part of the 21st century that got this thing going, and it's what we have today. And boy, he'd be so thrilled to see what's here now. I don't know if I said that well or not, or said it well enough to be understood, but we need to think a lot bigger.
Yeah, Glenn, I totally understand. I really resonated with what you said about, if you can accomplish your goal in your lifetime, then your goal is not big enough. And, you know, I just had the sudden realization that, you know, my goals probably are not big enough. So, you know, there's a couple of things that I want to talk about before we move on to the next topic. And Glenn, you started talking about, you know, as a man, finding your place in the world. So, you know, why don't we focus on this topic for a little bit? Because, you know, at this segment of Stuff Men Do, that's what we really want to focus on, is, you know, what does it mean to be a man in the world? And everyone has their own definition. But Edward, for you, what does it mean to be a man for you? What do you think are the qualities of a good man in the world?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question with so many possible definitions. But I think the first thing that bubbles to the top is that a man, you know, has a a character of integrity and is able to live that out. That's the kind of thing that bubbles to the top from there. And Elsie, as a man, your ability to lead, which requires you to be above and beyond good at following, is essential for there. So whether that's, you know, that's kind of a loaded term, I guess, because we say lead and you think like, oh, that's the guy out in front of a large formation. That's a CEO. That's a thing like that. But when I talk about lead, I think the most important thing, especially, you know, coming from the perspective of a parent, is you have to be able to lead yourself. I've heard people say on a couple occasions about parenting, and I think this illustrates it well. It's like, it's not called childing. It's called parenting. And the key to parenting is being able to lead yourself. If you can lead yourself, your time, in the right manner, as a man, then everything else will follow, going from there. And I think that is the key. You know, you need to be a leader, but when you do that, it's not what conventional wisdom would portray as the leader. You know, somebody up in front of masses speaking or moving in a direction and everybody's following. It's that person of integrity, who has established a character over time and has integrity to that character as they do everything in life, whether that is their business, their relationships, their relationship with their creator or their faith. All those things have to be aligned and synchronized. And I think the man, the most successful man, is the one who can do those things and keep those things in alignment.
I love it. And I really believe in, you know, leading by example and integrity, because when I first started trying to, you know, quote, be a leader, whether it was in high school or classes or just at work, I would just try to command people. Like you say, you know, you do this, you do that, and delegate the work. And that doesn't mean that's not leadership at all. You know, at the time I thought it was, but over time you really realize that, you know, you might get people to do a few things for you for a couple of days, but, you know, sometimes resentment will build. And of course it's different for everyone. So that might work for some personalities, but it's all about being an example and inspiring other people. And I'll say that, you know, being a man to me, I think you're definitely right, Edward. It's all about integrity. I think that's one really big thing for me, is having the integrity to go out there and do the right thing, even when it's uncomfortable, even when, you know, you have to be a strong person or make yourself vulnerable. I think it's very important to do the right thing, to go help people. I think that's definitely a huge thing. And I don't know if I'm being very clear on this, but I would say another thing is definitely leadership, to go out there and make a change in the world, to do whatever it takes. I would say that those are some of the biggest points for me. And so I don't want to take up too much of the spotlight right now, Glenn. What do you think it means to be a man?
Well, I think one of the most important elements of manhood is being deliberate. There's so many things, so many aspects of a man's life where it is easy to be like water and take the path of least resistance and get dumped out at the lowest point. But when we are deliberate about seeking out, continuing to find out, who am I? What am I supposed to do? What is my purpose? And, you know, those are the proverbial layers of the onion. You think you've dug deep, and the next event that puts pressure on you squeezes a little more. And, you know, pressure doesn't create good or bad character in us. It exposes whatever character we already have. So, you know, Edward and I talk about this often. You'll hear youth sports coaches talk about wanting to develop character in their kids, in the kids that are on their team. And when I have the opportunity and a coach that's interested in hearing it, my response is often, you can't avoid, you're going to create character in them. That part, you can't help that. That's unavoidable. It's the question is, are you being deliberate about what kind of character? Have you defined what it is you want to see from these kids you're coaching? And the same is true with a leader in business or the leader of a family. And honestly, when we're leading ourselves, which, as Edward said, where it all starts, is, are we deliberate? Do we have a game plan? It's kind of like a goal. Because if I don't set goals for myself, there are plenty of other people that have goals for me. So I will fulfill someone else's goals. I'm going to fulfill a goal. It's just whether they're of my choosing or not. And so I think being a man is about being deliberate. That's one aspect of it, but I think a pretty pivotal one.
Definitely, Glenn. And you mentioned something that I think is important. It's something that I've really been thinking about a lot. And that's the ability to handle pressure. So I'm sure that you guys have seen these people out there in society who, you know, if you say boo, they're going to cave into the pressure. Or if you just tell them something mean, they're going to cave in. As a man, do you think it's important to be able to handle pressure? Edward, we'll start with you. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you will melt away. This is a significant challenge, I think, today. And Glenn kind of nicked on it a little bit. But one of the things as a man that you bring to the table is, you know, power physically and otherwise. You know, our frames are built more powerfully, you know, on average, you know, they're just more powerful. And so I think that one of the things that we have to embrace is using that and being confident, knowing that it's okay to be the most powerful entity. And I think this is one example I heard the other day is, you know, if you're the most powerful person in any room, when you walk in the room, if you're the most powerful person in that room, you have a humongous responsibility. And you can do a couple things with that power. You can either then figure out how you can use that power to make things better for all the other people in that room, or you can think about how to take advantage of that power to get stuff for you selfishly. And so I think that's really what this boils down to is, you know, the society will say that if you're the most powerful person in the room, you are automatically a despot. You're automatically going to use it for selfish uses. But the true man, the man of integrity, the man who is deliberate, then sees that power as not something solely for themselves, but sees the fact that to get the greatest reward for themselves, they're going to raise the waterline for as many people within their sphere of influence as they possibly can.
Thank you for sharing. I really like what you said about being the most powerful man in the room. And I think that, you know, one of the kind of cliche sayings that I've heard a lot is that if you are the most powerful person in the room, or I think that the actual quote that I heard was, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. So I think that that's definitely something, you know, in terms of, you know, wanting to improve yourself, I think it's always important to change your environment. And this is something that you know, personally, I've really been working to do. You know, I'm still a young guy, and you know, in the past, you know, I was pretty emotional. I didn't really know how to handle pressure that well, but I really discovered that it's all about mindset. Like, bad things happen to people. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to have bad days, but it's all about how you handle those days. Because you can say, oh, boo hoo, this sucks, you know, woo me. But, or you could say, you know, how can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? So I think it's definitely super important to do that. Glenn, what are your thoughts on pressure? I know you're the initial person who kind of talked about it. Do you have any more thoughts you want to add into there for how to handle pressure?
Well, I would love to hear Edward talk a little bit about preparation, mm-hmm. Marine Corps style. So just in the context, two thoughts, Edward, and you and I have talked about this before, but tell our listeners a little bit about the fact that, you know, if you wait until the pressure is on, like we said, the pressure is going to squeeze out whatever's in you. So what do the Marines do to prepare a warrior to be ready for situations? And then maybe another area of pressure, Edward and Kenny, I don't know if we have time in this segment for all of this, but I'd also love to hear Edward tell, because I'm sure there are guys and ladies listening that would love to hear, how did this guy Edward integrate and or work at the integration of his faith, which so often people think of the Christian faith in particular as, know, baby Jesus, meek and mild, and that's all they can picture. So a guy that had to squeeze the trigger, or whatever they call it, you know, in a helicopter gunship, and know what you're raining down. You may be blowing up the wall of a building, but there's other damage that happens, we know. And so how did you integrate those? I'm sure that was a journey for you, and probably not an easy one.
Yeah, and this goes back to, you know, when we talk about character, you know, what is your definition of character, and going into a situation and responding, you know, powerfully or timidly. That's a function of your character, and ultimately, you know, that has something to do with courage. So what is courage? A lot of people will see things that Marines will do in exceptional situations in combat or in training. You receive medals and things for these, for being extensively courageous and doing a courageous act. But ultimately, you know, courage isn't something that all of a sudden you out of nowhere, you just do. And then the fear is there, but you don't have fear because you're courageous. Courage is you just acting out and doing the things that you have built within your character to do. And let me see if I can break that down a little bit. For in the military, we do extensive amounts of training. So you train over and over and over again. So, you know, the physical, you know, muscle acts, the things you have to say and do are just routine. But then higher than that is like the why are you doing it? So why would I do this act? And so something, for example, there's troops on the ground and they need ammunition, and you've got that ammunition in your helicopter. You look down at the landing zone and you see that there's RPGs and tracers flying across this zone. So you either go into that zone as you've trained hundreds of times to do, drop off that ammunition because you know without that they're going to be overrun, killed, or captured, or you shirk away from that and you do what's less courageous and you don't execute. You know, and people will say, well, you know, when it comes down to it, any Marine would have done that. I'm like, yeah, that's probably true, because every Marine has been trained and built within their character a response and knowing that they work for a higher importance. Their job is to make sure that that person who is depending on them gets the support that they need. And so then the fear is there, but your training takes over, your character takes over, and you're able to put the helicopter on the ground, get the ammunition to them, and get out of there. Regardless of whether or not you're injured or your aircraft is injured or your team is injured. And those are I think that's what, you know, just what it comes down to. You know, character really is essentially the key. Character, a character of courage, is something that you build. And ultimately that decision to be courageous, to act powerfully, is a decision you made long, long ago. And when you get to that point, you can't do anything else because it's ingrained in you. Your why is so ingrained in you. You know, for Marines, it is, I support the man on the ground that needs me. So for aviation is, I provide the fires that they need for them to accomplish their mission. I get them to the place where they need to be. I get them the supplies that they need at the time they need them. And those are already built in. And so fear then gets pushed aside and you're able to do what's right. Again, acting in integrity, acting in alignment with that character that you spent so much time building up.
Thank you for sharing, Edward. I think that the three key takeaways that I got from that is the character, you know, understanding that you're really serving for a higher power and, you know, a higher order, whatever the case may be. And for someone like me who's in business, just understanding that, you know, the things that I do every single day, messaging people, doing sales calls, setting up things, hiring people, you know, you really have to focus on the bigger picture. Like, you know, I really want to help people and I want to make sure that I help myself first so that I can help other people, so I can get the resources, so that I can help my family and my community. And like from a higher picture, it's important to do that. And you mentioned something that was very interesting to me is the training, the preparation. That's definitely key in being able to handle that fear, to being able to handle that pressure, especially when you're in the battlefield, Edward. So I'm sure that there's, you know, entrepreneurship, it's kind of like a big thing nowadays. So a lot of people are getting into business. And, you know, especially as you start to rise up in the ranks or you build your business, you realize that there's a lot of pressure. You know, you might have 30, 100, or even 1,000 employees who are dependent on you and your decisions. You know, that's a lot of pressure. people's income, they're dependent on you. Their livelihood is dependent on you. What they eat, what they wear is dependent on you. And sometimes that pressure really builds up and a lot of people can't handle it. So I want to know what your guys' thoughts are on this idea. You know, you said it's very important to train before, to prepare. So what are some things that people in this situation who might not be going through the military, what are some things that they can do to start doing this? What do you guys think? Well, we'll start with you, Edward. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think the most simple answer, and this is something that I've wrestled with for a long time. We talk about, in the military, you talk about discipline, habits, and training. But I think if you break it down to what I need to do right now, what I need to do today to get to that point, you know, because you can look in the long view and I want to have this character. You can define all the traits, but it doesn't happen instantly. It doesn't happen overnight. So what can I do right now? And it comes down to discipline and habits. But a term that I've run across really recently was taking advantage of that slight edge. It's a book by Jeff Olson titled The Slight Edge. And it talks about, you know, taking simple disciplines and turning them into your goals. But really what that slight edge is in the simplest of terms is like daily choosing to do the things that will help you move toward your goals and not doing the things that will move you away from your goals. And now that seems like, okay, that's obvious. But here's the trick. The point is that most of those things are as easy to do as they are not to do. So if my goal is a physical goal where I want to, you know, become stronger or to lose weight, which many people are challenged with, you can either eat the healthy dinner and skip the cake. You know, it's pretty easy to do. You're going to eat dinner anyway. You can skip the cake. That's pretty easy. And the next day, you know, will you see any results? Or you can then decide, okay, you know what? I'll kind of have the burger, fries, and the drink, and the cake. You know, and the next day, you're not going to see a big difference. But cumulative over time, these kind of slight edge type of actions are going to have a cumulative, you know, compounding interest type of effect on how you reach your goals. And so I think that's what we need to do as we're looking for these lofty goals, looking to attain a great character for ourselves, is we need to go and engage in these specific tasks aligned to our goals each day, and then build the disciplines one action at a time throughout the day, knowing full well that it's really easy to do them, but it's really easy not to do them. And that's the mindset, I think, that helps people overcome it. Ultimately, it comes back to, you know, the timeless question that Hamlet asks as he's holding York's skull in his hand. He's like, you know, to do or not to do? You know, that's the question. And we get so frustrated with this question. But it's really not, you know, action. We usually know what the action is. What we don't see is that compounding interest effect of doing those small, slight actions over time, over years, over months, because we want it now. And our culture, specifically our American culture, does not help that. We want it now, we want it big, and we want it fast. You have to stick to those slight acts each day that are just as easy to do as they are not to do.
I love it. I love what you said about the American culture, because it's true. You know, we want convenience and we want things big. You know, we want a supersized meal at McDonald's. And Edward, I found what you said to be really interesting about the compounding effect of the actions that we take. Because, you know, I've always known that the actions you take are super important. It's your most important decision. But I'd never really thought about it in terms of, you know, the compounding effect. So I found that to be very interesting. And it's also very true. And so I wanted to kind of throw in my two cents for what I think is good to, you know, expand your ability to overcome pressure. And it's sort of related. It's to do things that scare you. You know, when I was a middle schooler in middle school or a high schooler, pretty much everything scared me. Like, I'd be scared to talk to people or to you know, speak publicly. And, you know, now I'm talking to you guys, you know, I talk to people from all over the world. And, you know, you reach that point by doing things that initially scare you, so you can expand your possibilities. And I think it's super important. So as an entrepreneur, you know, go skydiving, do things that scare you. I haven't gone skydiving yet, but I'm sure it'll be on the list eventually. And so Glenn, I want to get your input on this. What do you think?
Well, I love what you guys have had to say. You know, I one of the problems, one of the things that chases men away from achieving the greatness that they were created for, And that looks different in every different man. There are some men that were crafted for acclaim, and there are others that were crafted to be in the shadows. But it doesn't mean they're not doing some great thing or contributing in some great way to to the world we're in. So after a lot of years of studying this and thinking about it and talking to people, all of researching, again, I kind of alluded to this earlier, I think it's so important to know who you are, because otherwise we find ourselves, well, I'm going to be like Ed, you know, I want to be a chopper pilot, you know, and then go into some cool, significant way of contributing to society. But maybe that's not what that person was cut out to do. So a couple of essential things I think are important is for guys to explore their values. Forget about what you say your values are. And it's funny how many adults you can talk to. You go, well, what are your values? They don't have a clue. So I think until we really analyze, you know, I can say what I want or say what I want people to think that I think is important. But here's what matters is what I really think is important. So you track your spending, how you spend your time, how you spend your money, how you invest your energy. Track that for a month and you'll know your values. Now, can you work to change them if you want to? Sure. But you'll know your values. The other thing people need to know is their value. How was I made? What do I do well? What are the things that people come to me and say, you know what, you're awesome at this, give me your opinion. Those are the things we need to come to understand. What value do I contribute to the world? How was I crafted? What am I destined for? And then finally, people have to understand, where am I now? There's some people that are ready to move forward. Some people have dug themselves a huge ditch. And they need to put all of their focus into getting out of that ditch and then look at, okay, now what goals do I want to set? I think it's, you know, there's a whole process of very specific steps people can take. And honestly, we're developing those more and more at the Return of Man, little shameless plug there. But the point is, there are specific ways to go about finding out, who am I? What was I made for? What matters for me? How does that target, what sort of naturally targets me towards a particular goal? And then you start to really find a way to get on a path and you implement a lot of these practices of, do I take a cold shower in the morning and why? You know, what does that do for me? You know, am I doing it just because manly men say to do it, or is it, do I have a purpose for it? Do I avoid the cheeseburger and the cake, or, you know, whatever the case might be?
I think that's key. I think it's always important to think about why, because I found that, you know, I deal a lot with productivity and, you know, increasing efficiency in the workplace. And one of the reasons why people are inefficient in what they do, and it's the same for, you know, establishing new habits, is they don't think enough about the specific action. They don't really understand the why. Because when you really discover, you know, how it fits into your values and your characters, Glenn, I think that you really start making leaps and bounds in your own progress. So guys, for this conversation, I want to take a little bit of a turn. We spent a good while on that question, and I think it was fantastic. And so I want to talk a little bit more about the social circle. So it's your wolf pack. How important do you guys think it is for a man to have a wolf pack of individuals, other people who help to uplift you, who are like-minded and who are in similar situations as you? So Edward, what do you think about this?
Yeah, so this is a great question. The wolf pack, you know, your system of support, your community is really what this comes down to. And I'll answer it this way, and I'll answer this from the position of my faith. But for some reason, the Creator and His infinite wisdom decided to separate us, decided to put us in these bodies. Not only individually, but also he broke his own identity into two different genders and gave us different roles and different qualities and different aspects. And then he created this gap within us that makes us desire and yearn for relationship between man and woman, you know, sexual relationship, but also social relationship and emotional connection. So I think it's part of our design. It's designed into us to have to engage in this community. So whether it's, you know, the caveman surviving against, you know, the saber-toothed tiger, or me and my community surviving in the National Capital Region, where it's really hard to live on a normal salary that would allow you to live, you know, very well in the rest of the United States. But you have to have that community there, looking towards each other, focused outwards, so me focusing on the rest of my community and the rest of my community focused in the same manner, but together that becomes infinitely powerful. And the wolf pack is such a great image because the single wolf is vulnerable and pretty easy to take down. But the pack of wolves is a whole different story. And I just think it's a beautiful design that need was built into us. And if we embrace that need and build our wolf pack, you know, so again, pulling us out of ourselves and focusing on those around us. If I can bring out all the skills, talents, and abilities of my entire pack, and they're playing at the top of their game, then that pack is going to be supremely powerful because they're in turn going to do that same thing right back to me. So the quick answer is it is absolutely essential to have the pack, and then choosing that pack and then pouring into that pack and empowering them to operate at their highest potential is the key.
You know, Edward, I got to say, I think it's true for every single situation in life, you know, for your relationships, for your family and your community, and also business. And this is something that I've been talking about for a while. You know, I've only been in business for like the last year in entrepreneurship. And I've been, you know, quote, a solopreneur. So I've been trying to do everything alone. And I've really come to the realization is that, you know, if I really want to reach the next level and reach the goals, you got to have a wolf pack for your business. You got to find those people who will help you and, you know, because you know, you have strength in numbers and you got to find the right people. And the wolf pack really helps you to see different angles and perspectives that you don't have. And then they also complement your personality. So this is where, especially in business, you want to look at the personality type as well. You know, if you're a type A person, maybe you need a type S person to work with you in sales or networking, for instance. So Glenn, well, what are your thoughts on this topic? How important do you think the wolf pack is?
Well, I think it's a great name for the next men's group that Edward and I start. But I think you two have nailed all the salient points for the moment. It's great. It's good, very good response.
Thank you, Glenn. I appreciate that. I think we've had a fantastic conversation today, guys. I've really enjoyed it. I know that the listeners out there who you're listening to the show right now, I know that you've enjoyed it as well. And if you have any feedback, you know, send us emails, send us comments, you know, let us know how we can provide you more value or improve the show even further. So I realize that it's almost been an hour right now, Edward and Glenn, you know, time has really flown and it's been a fantastic interview so far. So before we start to wrap things up, I just have a couple of really quick questions for us to go through. And this one is something that's important. So, you know, culture, society, it shifts so rapidly. There's a lot of polarizing people out there, polarizing groups. And everyone makes mistakes. Every single person makes mistakes. And therefore, society is going to make mistakes. Culture is going to make mistakes. And so what are some of these mistakes that you guys see men typically take nowadays, younger men? What are some of these mistakes that you see them make? Well, we'll start with you, Edward.
Conveniently, I have four 20-something children, so I get the firsthand experience on seeing these sorts of mistakes. But easily, just right off the top of my head, you know, the bottom line is, young men, they want it right now. They want instantaneous, you know, we've touched on this before. A lot of that is our culture, but a lot of that's just the nature of a young, passionate person. Because young men in our culture today, they have no shortage of passion. But the time horizon is where they run into trouble. They want to have impact. You know, over and over, I want to have impact. I want a positive impact. I want to change the world. I want to be a difference maker. My daughter has that tattooed on her arm, and I think it would apply to any young man or woman that we have today, but they want to have these impact. You know, I've had several people say, you know, I got to change jobs. You know, I've been here 6 whole months and I have not made an impact on the world, you know? And I'm like, okay, I get it. You're eager, ambitious. But I think the mistake is you're thinking this is going to happen right now, like magic. And you hear all these stories of people, you know, that have started businesses and they've exploded. And that is the exception, not the rule. So certainly, you know, strive for that and look for that. And if you can find that niche, if you can find that disruptive technology that helps you get there, you know, absolutely go for it. But also know that typically these things take time to build. And so I would say the biggest mistake that young men make today is that they want it now and they're not ready to put in the work for the long haul. And that goes right back to those slight edge disciplines. You know, you've got to be willing to change it and make it a habit and a discipline, not a trick that you employ for a short time to get somewhere and then you're done. You know, you're building something for the long haul, for the, you know, eternal haul, not for, you know, to get somewhere and then be able to sit on your couch and then watch TV for the rest of your life.
Edward, I'll say that, you know, over the last year, as I've been in business and just exploring different options for jobs, careers, and life, I've definitely been guilty of that every now and then. But you know, soon after you realize that, you know, you got to have short-term impatience. And what I mean by that is the actions you take. Like, if you have to do something, you have it now. But realize that the results for those actions are delayed. So you have to have long-term patience for real results. Like an example is when I first got into things, I started a financial blog and some trading, and you know, I expected to make a whole bunch of money at once, and when I launched it, that's definitely what did not happen. I made like, you know, well, less than $0 from that. So you definitely got to be patient, and I think that's definitely key. That's a mistake that I've made. What about you, Glenn? What mistakes do you see young men make nowadays?
Well, I think Edward has probably touched on one of the most important ones or enumerated, and you've given good examples of it. I'd like to just offer a little bit of a contrary outlook on it, and that is, and I don't think I'm going to get this quote quite right, but we've all heard this before, that hard times create strong men create good times. Good times create soft men. Soft men create hard times. You know, the world keeps going in a lot of cycles. History, I know Scott Adams, the creator of the Dilbert cartoon, has a very eloquent rebuttal of this, but I do think there is certainly an element of truth that history repeats itself. And the reason I said all that is to say I'm very heartened at the young men that I see coming up through the ranks right now. I was very negative for a lot of my life, always finding fault with just about everything that didn't agree with everything I had to say, but not entirely a unique perspective in our world. But I've begun seeing things differently in the last 10 years or so. I'm sure it's a combination of age and experience and other good people in a wolf pack that are helping me see things better. I'm really, really excited about a lot of the young people coming along today. And Kenny, I don't know your exact age, but since you divulged a little about your own personal journey today, I suspect you're, I don't know, maybe half of my age.
I'm 21, so I'm pretty young.
Okay, crud. All right, fine then. You're a third of my age. So. Great. Thanks for ruining my morning, Kenny. No, you don't at all. So,
no, you're 42, right?
What's that?
You're 42, right?
You're 40, yes. Well, my favorite line when I'm in a group of people is I like to say, you know, now that I'm past 30, and if any of my adult kids are nearby, they'll say twice, Dad. You mean twice. So, yeah, so I did make 42, and that was a while ago. But the point is this. So you're a perfect example, Kenny. I see young people like you, smart, motivated. But here's the exciting thing to me. You're not trying to act like the know-it-all. Clearly, you've learned a ton in your young life. And you're way ahead of where I was when I was 21. But you're still excited and interested in learning from other people and spotlighting other people and knowing that by doing that, you're going to get your share of the pie out of all that, whether it's financially, in significance, whatever way. So I'm, you know, are there mistakes we can point out that younger men are making? Absolutely, and I think Edward is spot on that they want it quickly. But there are tons of young people like you, Kenny, and younger guys than me, like Edward, that are just setting the world on fire in their own way. And I think I'm very, very excited and enthusiastic for what's coming in the next few years. I have very high hopes.
As Glenn's talking, and we come to the realization that you're the same age as my youngest son, it expresses something that I don't want to neglect, and I don't ever want. There's so much generational tension out there that we shouldn't leave this. We shouldn't let anybody who's listening to this leave thinking that there is not a beauty and an essential role for all of these generations to come together. And I think back to the Odyssey. And if you haven't read the Odyssey, you know, just to break it down for you, you know, there's a lot of action there. It's a big journey story. A lot of stuff's happening. You know, Odysseus got to get back. His wife's being, you know, courted by all these suitors. You know, so he's got to take care of business. He gets back. All the action happens, and what we would call the climax, you know, in a Marvel show, happens. And then the book just keeps going, and it keeps going, and everybody's like, you know, American readers are like, what is going on? I don't get it. But what you don't realize is at the end of the Odyssey cannot be over until Odysseus and his son Telemachus and his father, you know, Telemachus' grandfather, together engage in that final battle to rout the enemy. Until those generations come together, harnessing the experience of the grandfather, the passion, the vigor, you know, and the physical prowess, you know, of the son, and then kind of pulling it all together, really with the management oversight and strategic outlook of Odysseus. You know, until that happens, it's not going to work. And I think that pulls us right back to that wolf pack. We get so caught in having a wolf pack of people that are, you know, like-minded, you know, in our group, and we all share the same values, but you have to have that that tension of, you know, that spans multiple generations, or you're missing a lot. And then we talked about, you know, history repeating itself and how that's going to happen. The only way to keep that from happening, the only way is through legacy. And we hinted on this earlier. You know, if I'm not invested, you know, you can't. I just had a conversation in my Thursday group that we meet at work. A lot of these guys are in their 70s that I meet with, and they're like, those young kids. And I'm like, if we come at it that way, we've created a wall. And we talked about this earlier too. You know, you're putting up another wall, and you have to break those down and go, what can we all contribute? What value do we all contribute to make this pack the most powerful beast that it is? And I think, you know, this is something that we knew long, long ago when we were writing epic tales. But now we really want to get to that single climactic moment, and then, you know, and then you know, just slide it off the table and then move on to the next thing. You know, thankfully, Marvel has embraced us a little bit. So we got the after credit trailers, and you got to wait for them. And I think that's a great example. You know, just a tiny little example of what we have to do. We have to come back together and figure out, okay, what did we know? What do we know now? And what will we know in the future? And the generations working together will help us to do that. So that was a little long, but I feel like it was a good place to inject it.
Yeah, I think it was really important for you to do that, because one of the big realizations that I've had throughout talking to you guys, Edward and Glenn, is, you know, really the importance of the different generations coming together to, you know, kind of, I don't know if it's, you know, a proper term for this, but kind of unite and, you know, to just work together. And I guess it's something that I didn't really, you know, really realize the true importance of it before this meeting. And it's something that I found very interesting about our conversation today, is that we have, you know, three different generations in the same call in the same interview, sharing our experiences and our perspectives of the world. So it's been very interesting to me. And, you know, I really appreciate both of you coming on the call today. I think we've had a fantastic conversation today. And before we, I want to make sure I'm respectful of both your guys' time. I realize we're getting over the hour-long mark right now, and time has just really flown. So that just shows how good the conversation has been so far. I've really enjoyed it, and I hope that you guys have as well. But Edward, before we let you go, before I let both you guys go on with your day, what one thing do you want people listening to do right now?
I want everybody to realize, you know, that we'll just walk away thinking, you know, realizing, keeping in their mind that the phrase, it doesn't have to be like this, you know, and whatever this is different for everybody, but there's something that weighing you down. There's something that keeping you from going after your goals. There's something that's keeping you from doing those things and building those habits that you need to do, but it doesn't have to be like this. And you can free yourself from that anxiety. But that way is not what we're sold on social media. It's not what you're going to find most of the time on Netflix and in advertisements. You know, it's something that's exemplified that we knew a long time ago. We knew it 2 millennia ago on the eastern coast of the Mediterranean. We had a perfect example in Jesus of how to do this, how to live without anxiety, and how to change things for the people around us, you know. And whether you believe in God or not, the example that Jesus set of the way to live without anxiety and to embrace your freedom and change the world, you can't deny the fact that there was an impact there. And so I would just, that would be my parting shot. You know, it doesn't have to be like this. And ultimately, you have the tools to change it should you choose to accept it.
Thank you so much, Edward. And before I let you guys go, do either of you have any closing thoughts that you want to leave the listeners with?
I'll just throw out there to our listeners, you were created for greatness. Does every person, as Edward is saying, do we need a reconciliation to the Creator through the work that Jesus Christ did? Yes, none of us can achieve that bridge of relationship that was intended for us on our own. But through, I'm sure, well-meaning but misguided instruction through many generations, people have come to think that the Christian faith thinks that everybody is a dirty, rotten piece of manure, and we're not. And you're not. You were created for greatness. God meant it when he finished creating mankind, man and woman, and called it very good. He wasn't mistaken by that. He didn't do the palm to forehead. What was I thinking? He meant it, and he hasn't changed his mind about it. We need Christ, but we need to understand we were made amazing. And you don't magnify an artist by looking at their artwork and saying, oh, that's a piece of crap, so you must be a great artist. The greater the artwork, the greater the artist. Don't think that putting yourself down puts God up. It doesn't work that way. You were created for greatness. Don't be afraid to find out who you are, what you're supposed to do, and start pursuing it.
Thank you, Glenn. It's all about finding your place in the world. So, Edward, before I let you go, I know you're starting a coaching business. I'm not sure how far you're in with your training and everything you're looking to do, but if the audience wants to learn more about you and what you've been up to in the world, your business, and your experience in the Marines, where can they find you at?
Here's what I'll say, you know, and I like what Glenn just said, but I just say, whatever you do, it's going to be better when you do it together. So I'd ask people to check out, if you want to learn more about doing things together, just check out togethergeneration.com, www.togethergeneration.com, to figure out more about where I'm going and what I'll be doing in the future. And then I would welcome anybody to hit me up at the email edwardnotw@gmail.com. That's edwardnotw@gmail.com. Questions, concerns, if you're interested in coaching, hit me up. But fantastic. Thank you so much for having me today, Kenny, and allowing me to share my mind and to learn from the both of you. Thank you so much.
Edward, you have been a fantastic guest today. I've learned so much from you, Edward, and you as well, Glenn, and I think it's been a fantastic episode. So I can't thank you guys enough. I think we've had a fantastic episode. And also to the listener listening to this show right now, thank you as well. It's your support that keeps us going, that keeps us creating content like this with great conversations and great interviews. So I hope that you guys have enjoyed this first episode of Stuff Men Do on the Let's Talk Business podcast. We're going to keep doing monthly episodes of the show. Maybe we'll do them more often. We'll have to figure that out. We're still pretty early into figuring out how this segment of the show will go. But if you have any feedback for us, or if you know anyone you think would be a good guest for the show, don't hesitate to let us know. You can reach me at email. My email is kennyaronson@davincimind.net. Alternatively, make sure that you also check out Edward's material at togethergeneration.com. And if you're also interested in his coaching, check out his email. Send him an email, edwardnotw@gmail.com. And wherever you're listening to this at, make sure you also check out the links below. I'll make sure to put the links below wherever you're listening to this at, whether it's on iTunes, Spotify, Anchor, Podbean, or one of the other 1,000 different providers. But anyway, we'll close things out here. I hope you guys have enjoyed this conversation. I've enjoyed recording it, and I think I've learned a ton. I hope you guys did as well. So make sure you leave a rating for the show. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. It would mean the world to me. Ratings are super important. And we'll catch you on the next episode of Let's Talk Business. Thank you so much for watching.